All right, we're live. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Austin Peterson here, former presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. Nice to see you all. Oh boy, that is looking a little rough there on that stream, that GIF. But we are going to not have a video live stream today. We're going to have an audio live stream. And just so you know, I am here. So if you are listening live, I am sitting here in my studio and we're going to have a discussion today. So I invite you guys to come on in and have a talk about some of the things that are weighing heavily on your minds. Let's discuss the big issues of the day. I've already got a bunch of viewer questions, reader questions that have come in today that I'm going to be answering for you all. But first, before we begin today, here is a very brief word from our sponsors. Will America survive its next election, or let two-party corruption collapse the country into a second civil war? Blood Republic is a new political thriller which details what happens when the Electoral College ties and both parties claim victory. Blood Republic by James R. Duncan is available for download or in paperback on Amazon. All right, and we're back. Thanks a lot for tuning in today, guys. Today is the big vice presidential debate between Tim Kaine and Mike Pence. Just so you guys know, I will be live streaming this as well. It's going to be pretty interesting. I'm a little sad that Mr. Bill Weld, former governor of Massachusetts, will not be there, Gary Johnson's VP, because he's really proven himself to be very articulate in this debate, don't you guys think? I mean, you know, at first, obviously, I didn't endorse the guy because of some of the positions that he had taken in the past that I had a big problem with. But as this campaign has gone on, it's been interesting because, you know, he's really shined, I think, in the debates that he's in. I haven't agreed with many of his positions necessarily, but you got to give the guy a hand. He definitely knows how to perform properly for the media, certainly much more than Governor Gary Johnson, I think, if we're being totally honest here. But I'm looking forward to seeing the debate between Pence and Tim Kaine. Tim Kaine, very much a moderate Democrat, and Mike Pence, a very much a conservative, hard right conservative Republican. So I've got a bunch of questions that have been sent in earlier today. I'm going to go ahead and get to those first, and then if you guys are in the live stream, I see you there, Melissa Marie, Dylan Glorioso, and Mr. Esoteric. If you guys are in there, go ahead and feel free and give me a question that you guys want. Yeah, I fixed the date for you, Dylan. You called me out there. So feel free to drop your questions in there, and we'll have a nice, fun, lively debate. Just breaking news, I saw that Jason Stapleton responded to my analysis of Ron Paul talking up Jill Stein. So I'm going to drop that in the live stream there, the live stream chat, if you guys want to watch that whenever you're done. I haven't seen it yet. I'm kind of interested to see what it says, but it looks like he backs me up. You know, what's funny was, you know, I was criticizing Ron Paul yesterday for him talking up Jill Stein, and I thought I was going to get a lot of crap for it, and I certainly did, but I actually got a lot of support, and so a lot of people who were closely attached to Dr. Ron Paul as well were saying, hey, some of this stuff really needed to be said. And you know, the thing is that I think the reason why he's not endorsing Gary Johnson has nothing to do with principle. I think it has a lot more to do with just some personal beef between the two of those guys, but we can discuss that more later. And yes, Caleb, I will answer your question about Daryl Castle, the Constitutional Party candidate. But before I do, let's get to the questions that were sent in. First ones we've got coming up on Instagram, and the question is, do you prefer Kaine or Pence? And I actually don't really like either. You know, the thing is, though, being a libertarian, it's hard for me to decide between the two. And so I don't really care for either one of them. And so I can't say I like necessarily one of them more. Hey, Michael Futritis, nice to see you. Thanks for joining the live stream on YouTube. Really appreciate that. Really good question that I got today was, what would libertarians have done in response to 9/11? I think that libertarians, if depending on what office they're in, if they're a senator or a congressman or a president, obviously they would have done different things. But I think most importantly is that we would have most likely gone to war and had a declaration of war on the government of Afghanistan and on the Taliban and on Osama bin Laden. And that would have made all of the actions that we took there constitutional. Right now, it's what we call an AUMF, an authorization for the use of military force, which to me is a problem because essentially what it did was it granted a blanket war on terror around the world. A blanket war being it just happens everywhere all the time. And, you know, the war on terror just never ends. And that's what the government loves. The government loves never-ending war because that means, I mean, war being the health of the state, that means that, of course, the war never ends and the growth of government will continue indefinitely. So what would we have done? We would have followed the Constitution, but I definitely think we needed to go after bin Laden and his associates. Even Ron Paul, who's very much a dove, went ahead and voted for the authorization for the use of military force to go after Osama bin Laden. But later, I think he regretted it because he saw that it was used to justify a never-ending war on terror. And I think that being done, perhaps a libertarian might have also used a letter of mark in reprisal. That would have been hiring constitutional mercenaries to go after Osama bin Laden. Perhaps that might have been a more effective or efficient way for us to solve the problem, using the free market to solve the problem of terrorism. But to me, I think that libertarians would have handled the problem, we would have handled it quickly, and we would have handled it decisively. And of course, I think that we would have not had spent, you know, $2 trillion in a no-win war in Iraq. That's for sure. So I see I'm getting some good questions. Some people are talking about Alex Jones over here crying over Julian Assange. the juice boxes are making the frogs gay, guys. But let's talk about this question that I got. Michael Futritis asked me, can you explain a letters of mark, please? A letter of mark is basically the word mark. You may have heard of before in the term marked man. If you've got a mark on your head, essentially what you're doing is you're hiring private companies to go and perform assassinations. And if that sounds nasty to you, just remember that the government was doing the same thing to Osama bin Laden anyway, right? So it wasn't as if we were necessarily doing anything other than the fact that we were using constitutional mercenaries. So for me, I think that if you're talking about a letter of mark, really what you're doing is you're applying free market principles to solving the problems of terrorism and foreign policy. Yeah, they're called privateers in many ways. And they really get a bad rap nowadays because of some of the bad actors like Blackwater. But back in the American Revolution, privateers were heroes. They were considered patrioteers, really. So a letter of mark would be a constitutional way for us to fight terrorism without declaring a blanket war on terror. And of course, I never say real people hours, blood, sugar, sex, and magic because I am not, because I don't want to destroy my career, of course. So let's see. Good stuff. What's the next question? What do I think of the seemingly anti-gun remarks by Governor Bill Weld? He says, I am a definite Johnson voter, and I'm fairly confident in Governor Gary Johnson and his positions on gun rights, but I do worry about Weld's positions. Well, here's the interesting thing. I'm actually going to go ahead and drop this in the live chat for you all. But I think that in terms of Governor Bill Weld, he has actually softened his positions, and he's done that. I think he made a statement just today. If you go to thelibertarianrepublic.com and you type in the search bar, you type in Bill Weld, you'll see many articles. But check out the one from today. For the live stream viewers on YouTube, I'm going to go ahead and drop the link to this in the chat so that you all can see what I'm talking about. And if you're listening to this later on Facebook, then I think that you will... I'll go ahead and drop the... Sorry, I'm just typing. It's hard to type and talk at the same time. I'll go ahead and drop the URL in later on Facebook as well if you're listening to this later. So Bill Weld has said statements like, I don't support a ban on any class of weapons. He has said some stuff in the past, like, if you remove a pin from the AR-15, that it becomes a weapon of mass destruction. And of course, we all know how ridiculous that is. But to me, I think that Bill Weld he's not really a threat to the guns. I mean, remember, if he's got Gary Johnson as the president anyway, you know, Gary Johnson is not going to go and take our guns. There's not going to be mass gun grab or anything like that from Gary Johnson. He's the president he's the one that's going to be the president anyway. So you don't have to really worry about Bill Weld, I would say. And I know Gary Johnson has said things like, oh, we're going to be a co-president and all that kind of stuff. I don't really see that happening. Because there's no such thing as a co-president. There's no authority for anything like that. So even if Gary Johnson was thinking he was going to have some kind of weird co-president thing like he's discussed, I don't really see that happening. All right, here we go. Bill Weld says the Second Amendment is to defend against tyrannical government. Here's the URL for that, guys, so you can see that. Take a look there. Boom. There's Weld's statements on the Second Amendment. If you're watching that right now live on YouTube, So that's what I think. I think Bill Weld really isn't a threat to anybody's guns. Nowhere near as much as Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. You know why? Because both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have stated explicitly that if your name is put on a terrorist watch list, then you can't buy a gun. So just tell me exactly, why is it that the government can take away your constitutional rights simply because they put your name on a list? Can they take away your free speech rights because they put your name on a list? No, absolutely not. So you don't have to worry about your guns, I think, with the issue of Bill Weld. All right, so moving on, I got a good question here. Will you support Adam Kokesh in 2020, provided he runs as a Libertarian, wins the nomination? Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I've known Adam for years. Adam and I have been friends. We've had our differences, and most of those differences, I think, are tactical, not political, really, in terms of policy. I mean, obviously, I'm not an anarchist, so we're going to disagree on things like the non-aggression principle and other minute details. But Adam kind of terrifies me just because, you know, when he's always got this really angry look on his face, and he's like, you know, got his guns out and all that kind of stuff. I mean, the thing is that the President of the United States has to be a diplomat, right? He's somebody that has to get along with everybody. And, I've worked with Adam for a long time, and we've had a lot of bad interactions. We've had a lot of good ones. I mean, personally, I like the guy. I don't know that he'd be the best president. I'm not just saying that because I might run against him, because, you know, I haven't decided if I'm going to run for President of the United States or not. But the truth is that I can't say yes or no about who I'm going to support in 2020, because I don't know what's going to happen. The truth is that I think that, there's a good chance that Justin Amash might run. Right, I've heard some rumors about some other very good Liberty candidates that might run. People like Rand Paul might run again. It would be hard to decide if it was somebody between Justin Amash or Adam Kokesh. But I think, you know, if I had to choose between Amash or Kokesh, you got Amash, who's actually in the government and good experience, and he seems very calm and cool and collected and represents my ideals. Seems to be very much a minarchist. So I can't say whether I would support Adam or not. I mean, he's got to earn my trust if he becomes the candidate. I want to make sure that he's going to be a guy who would be a good diplomat. I don't think it's a good idea to run on a platform of abolishing the federal government, because that would be unconstitutional, of course, and the president has to obey the Constitution. So should I run against Adam in 2020, I think that would be a real sticking point. Of course, libertarians don't care about that. They don't care about the Constitution or liberty for the most part. Most of the libertarians that tend to run in the Libertarian Party circles, they're more interested in the philosophy rather than practical politics, which is why we're in the problems we're in. And you're saying, Austin, why don't you save us from Gary? I tried. Hey, listen, I tried to win, but what can I say? I just, my first time running for any office, so I didn't necessarily think I was going to win first time out. Anyway, so question, let's see. ANCAP, let's see. Somebody's got some good questions in here. Let's see, would Justin Amash run as a Republican or a Libertarian? Well, I think Justin Amash would run as a Republican. And, the truth is, guys, I don't really care what party you're running in. You know, if Justin Amash ran as a Democrat, I wouldn't care. I wouldn't care if he ran as a Green Party, as long as he believed what he believed. It's not the party, guys. It's not the party that matters. It is the principles that matter. So that's really what I think when it comes to Justin Amash. I think he's probably going to run as a Republican, but most likely, you're going to get a statist as a Republican, as the top of the Republican ticket. I mean, we saw what happened to Rand Paul. We saw what happened to Rand, and so it doesn't look good for libertarians in the Republican Party. So to me, I think that, I see Justin Amash maybe running, spreading the message, getting the word out, and then probably having to fall back on the Libertarian Party ticket in 2020 as well, simply because I think that, I'm pretty loyal to the Libertarian Party. You know, I support Gary and I support lots of Libertarian candidates. But if there's a good Republican running or if there's a good Democrat running, I think people should support him. It's the ideas. And so Rachel Reeves asked me, if it's not the party that matters, why are you supporting Gary Johnson for the party? Well, because I think that Gary is the most libertarian candidate who is running, to be honest. I think Gary, we've been giving Gary a hard time. And a lot of that is my fault. A lot of that is my fault because I exposed a lot of the flaws in Governor Gary Johnson's thinking. Because Gary Johnson is not a philosopher, guys. You got to stop giving him such a hard time. Because the thing is that you all saw me and John McAfee up there standing next to Gary, and we're both philosopher types. We're ideas types. And Gary Johnson is much more the kind of practical libertarian. He's very much the type of guy he's very much the type of guy that puts libertarian ideas into practice. You know, he believes libertarian ideas, but he's not steeped in the philosophy. You know, he doesn't know who Mises is. You know, he doesn't know Mises from Marx, right? So that, but that's okay. I don't really care if somebody doesn't have the philosophy if they're going to govern according to libertarian principles. And so I think that we got to stop giving Gary such a hard time. You know, if it, every single thing that we analyze in him is sometimes I think we're giving him a little bit too much difficulty. And yes, like Dustin McFarland says here in the chat, he's the only one with experience in an executive position, at least when it comes to government. Of course, Donald Trump's been an executive, and Hillary Clinton has not. Has it, you know, it's funny. I was watching Hillary Clinton yesterday, a video from Hillary Clinton, and she was talking about how can anybody lose $1 billion? Hillary Clinton was criticizing Donald Trump for losing $1 billion. Well, let me tell you something. You've got to lose money to make money. You know, the first 2 years of the Libertarian Republic for my business, I lost money. You know why? Because that's called investing. Sometimes you have to spend money to make money. And even if Donald Trump lost $1 billion, he's made billions more. He's made billions more. So the fact that Hillary Clinton, who's never made a payroll in her life, can criticize Donald Trump, who, listen, I don't like Donald Trump's policies. I do sort of like his personality in certain things, just because it kind of reminds me of me. Sometimes you got to be a butt chunk to get ahead. If you're going to be a business person, you got to kind of be a butt chunk. That's just really the truth, okay? But when it comes to his policies, I don't agree with him, and I'm not going to support him for president because I think that he's promoting populism rather than liberty. And so when it comes to Hillary Clinton, when she talks about, oh, how could somebody lose $1 billion? Listen, we don't all get $300,000 to speak at Goldman Sachs, Hillary. So, you know, you've never seen $1 billion in your life unless it was someone else's that you stole through our tax money. So I don't have any respect for Hillary Clinton or her attacks on Donald Trump. As a matter of fact, I'm really disappointed because I thought that Hillary was going to have so much to attack Trump on. She's got nothing. I mean, it's amazing these Democrats, the way that they're attacking Trump is not going to work because they're saying things like, Donald Trump hasn't contributed his fair share. His fair share of what? His fair share of theft, right? Oh, he hasn't paid taxes. What? So he's taken all his deductions, you know, contributed to his 401k. So what, he's given to charity? What has Hillary Clinton done? She's got a charity, and it turns out that most of the money looks like it's going straight into her pocket. You know, she's always been a corrupt thug. So you shouldn't be surprised that she doesn't have any good intellectual arguments to attack Donald Trump. But honestly, I thought she was a lot smarter than this. And you know what's funny is I always thought that she was going to win this election. She might lose, ladies and gentlemen. I'm starting to adjust my predictions on this one, especially because in states like Colorado, Gary Johnson has taken up to 14%. I saw he was at 23% in New Mexico. Gary Johnson could win New Mexico. So, and if that happens, man, I'll tell you what, guys, Hillary Clinton, they're mad. The Democrats are freaking out. That's why you see all these attacks being stepped up on Gary Johnson. That's why you see the Democrats doing everything they can to try and stop Gary Johnson. That's why they bring Ron Paul on to talk up Jill Stein, because they're terrified of what's going to happen if Donald Trump's the next president of the United States. I'm terrified, too, but I'm not about to sit here and lie to you all about what's going on, and I'm not going to sell out my principles just because I'm scared of the future. Listen, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. Sometimes you've got to change your behavior in order to change your outcomes. So, yeah, so I'm a little bit terrified about the possibility of Donald Trump as president of the United States. But you know what? Well, you know, with Hillary, we know the problem is with Hillary versus Trump is that Hillary is a known quantity. We know what Hillary is all about. With Trump, we have no idea. Maybe he'll win and he'll actually be a libertarian. We don't have any clue. But the difference, of course, was that Gary Johnson, we do know. We've seen him govern. We've seen his positions before. We know what he believes in. We know what he'll do if he is the executive, the commander-in-chief. That's why I trust Gary Johnson a heck of a lot more than I ever would Donald Trump. All right, so somebody asked me a question. Paul Copenhagen asks, is taxation theft? It's actually more like extortion. We can talk more about that later. And he says, I would love to hear more answers regarding where you feel the Libertarian Party should be going in terms of the First Amendment. With Gary Johnson getting the nomination, have you found your views on religious freedom changing more towards bake the cake? Or do you feel that this is more of an opportunity to press your view you expressed in the debate in Vegas that everyone deserves a right of conscience? No, nothing is ever going to change my mind that I think we should force people to associate with people that they don't agree with. I don't think that Christians should be forced to bake cakes for gay weddings. I disagree with that. And just like I don't think Muslims should be forced to make pork. right? Everyone has a right of religion. Everybody has a right of freedom. Everybody should have the freedom of conscience. So I'm going to say that no, I've not been changing my view on religious freedom just because we've had Gary Johnson as the LP's candidate. So Seth Van Halst says, oh, or could you talk about hyper-inclusive democracy? Do you feel like there should be more requirements or qualifications to vote? Good question. Probably not. The thing is that, you know, voting is somewhat of a right and it's somewhat not. And you can't vote on someone's free speech rights. You can't vote to take away someone's right to free speech. There's no vote that would justify that whatsoever. But yeah, everybody, if we're going to live in a free country, everybody should have the right to vote, or the freedom to vote, I would say. And so, yeah, I do think when it comes to hyper-inclusive democracy, yes, everybody needs to be included, but that doesn't mean everybody gets to vote on everything. I believe in a representative republic. That means that it has certain aspects of democracy, but the idea is that you have certain constitutional rights that no one can take away from you. All right, so another good question. Someone says, what are my views on term limits? I'm definitely in favor of term limits. I just think that one of the big problems we have are with career politicians. You know, if I would be president of the United States and that bill came across my desk, I would absolutely sign that in a heartbeat. So yeah, I definitely believe in term limits. So that's my answer for that. What is my view on the federal minimum wage? Jonathan says, it seems to me there has to be one. He says it would be better left off to the state governments due to the wide variation in cost of living across the country. Well, you say, on one hand, you says, what is the view on the federal minimum wage? And then you say that it has to be one, that it has to be left to the state governments. Well, that's not a federal minimum wage. I don't believe in a minimum wage at all, actually. I don't think the states ought to set a minimum wage, and I don't think that the federal government ought to set a minimum wage, because the problem is that you're pricing people out of the marketplace. What you're doing is, what happens is like, with this is just the argument from the marketplace, right? So if you raise the minimum wage, the people who have jobs who are on minimum wage are going to cheer. They're going to cheer, right? They're going to be excited, and they're going to go, and they're going to vote for you, and they're going to show up at rallies. But the people who can't get jobs, are the people who are not going to complain, because they don't know why they can't get a job. They don't understand. Generally, the people who are working minimum wage jobs tend to not be as educated in economics. That's not their fault. It's usually just that they're young or they haven't had a lot of experience or education necessarily. That's why they're going for a minimum wage job. And so what happens is that Michael Futritis says price floors make shortages. You're going to have a shortage of jobs, because if I know that I have to pay a minimum wage as an employer, then the minimum wage goes higher and higher and higher, well, then I have to find the most qualified person that I can get for that job, because I'm not going to pay someone that has no experience. I'm not going to pay someone to do a job if I know that they are not experienced. So essentially what's happening is that there is this whole vast invisible constituency of people who are harmed by the minimum wage, who do not even know they're being harmed by the minimum wage. Those people aren't going to show up to rallies. Those people aren't going to petition their congressman. Those people aren't going to know that the minimum wage hurts them. Sure, if they get a job, they're going to be like, okay, great, the minimum wages rise. But here's the problem. Do you know what you do as an employer if they raise the minimum wage? Raise prices. So the minimum wage creates inflation. And that's a problem too, because essentially the cost gets passed on to the customers. So when wages rise, prices rise. So you don't really get the good impact that you want, because the same people who are getting paid a minimum wage now have to pay more for essential goods and services. Here's a question from Matthew Gregory. He says, you seem to have lots of Christ-like values and seem to praise their founders for their actions and beliefs. So why would you consider yourself an agnostic as opposed to a deist? That's a really good question. I was raised a Christian, and after my mother died, I lost my faith, and I never went back. I was always very skeptical anyway, and so, you know, I was always a person in church, the kid in church who's at like, why, But then the answers that were given to me were just never satisfying. And essentially, I just don't like the concept of faith, essentially. I don't like the concept of faith simply because it asks me to believe something without any evidence. And I've been very heavily influenced by some of the 21st century philosophers like Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens and Daniel Dennett and others. I don't agree with everything that they say, but I do think that they make very good points, because when you extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. So the burden of proof is not on me to disprove that there is no God, because I can't disprove a negative, right? But when it comes to my belief as an agnostic, the truth is that I think that being agnostic is the intellectually honest position. The intellectually honest position is to say, I don't know. Like, I'm willing to listen to evidence, right? In order for you to be intellectually honest, ladies and gentlemen, you have to say that you will listen to all points of view and you will consider all points of view. You can make a decision, and my decision is that I don't believe, but that doesn't mean that I'm not willing to change my mind. You know, if there was a miracle that occurred in front of my eyes, well, then I might be willing to change my opinion. However, sometimes miracles can simply be your mind or eyes playing tricks on you. For example, there's all these spectrums of light that exist that the human eyes can't even see. So essentially, the human brain can play tricks on itself, especially when the brain is like on drugs or something like that. And I'm sure a lot of the ancients, the people who were writing the Bible and the Quran, they were probably eating a lot of the magic mushrooms that were growing on the sides of mountains, which is why they may have seen things like burning bushes. And that's not to denigrate anybody's faith. It's just to try and find a reasonable, rational explanation for supernatural, allegedly supernatural causes. And people make stuff up all the time. I mean, consider Malcolm Muggeridge. This is a Catholic who was trying to make sure that Mother Teresa would be canonized. Well, when they went to visit the Calcutta home of the dying, they had gotten this new film from Kodak. And this new film that they used was they were shooting in very dark conditions, and in the very dark conditions, when they went back to the studio, they found that the film developed beautifully. And then they said, "Oh wow, this is incredible." And then Malcolm Muggeridge turns around and says, "It's divine light. You'll find it's divine light, my boy." And you know, they were just getting ready to say, "Hey, three cheers for Kodak." But you know, some people are desperate to see. Some people see what they want to see. And I think that that's really what it is. And it's interesting to me that pretty much everybody who is religious is the same religion as their parents. I mean, does anybody see like the sort of correlation there? I mean, am I really going out of turn? Am I talking out of turn here? Somebody who's pro-life but struggling with supporting Gary Johnson. Good question. Mark Tucker says, what would you say to someone who's pro-life but struggling with supporting Gary Johnson? Well, here's the thing. I mean, you know, nobody's going to do anything about abortion laws, Mark. Most of the stuff that's happening with abortion is happening at the state level. So I wouldn't worry too much about the executive, and consider that it's a Supreme Court decision. So the president doesn't really have the authority to do anything anyway. Even though I'm pro-life as president of the United States, I would have had no constitutional authority to do anything about abortion unless the Congress were to give me a bill to cross my desk. And they weren't going to do that. They were not, you know, Congress is too much of a cowards to pass legislation overturning Roe versus Wade. So honestly, like, I don't know that it's necessarily a problem if you're a pro-life libertarian supporting Gary Johnson, simply because the president of the United States doesn't have the authority to do anything when it comes to abortion. All right. So good question. Good question. Somebody says, do I think Tom Woods is a statist or not libertarian just because they want to defer power from the Fed to the states? I don't think so. I think Tom Woods is really flirting with anarcho-capitalism these days. I would never call Tom Woods a statist. I have tremendous respect for Tom Woods. I've disagreed with him on certain things, and we had a big, huge dust-up over the non-aggression principle on his show. But I really enjoy Tom Woods' commentary. I like how he sticks it to statists, and he's someone who I really appreciate and respect. So to me, I feel like, Tom Woods, just because he wants to defer power from the federal government to the state government, I don't think that that's necessarily statist. I just think that it mostly has to do with the fact that he thinks the federal government has got too powerful and that we're more likely to be able to hold our state governments accountable. So that's my answer for that. Okay, so there are a couple of more good questions here on Facebook that were dropped in. Someone says, let's see, what is the libertarian stance on what should happen if there is harm caused to someone or an animal, like a pet, for example? Do animals have rights or are they property? Well, technically and legally, animals are property, but because they're alive, there are rules, because they're sentient, many of them, there are rules for what you can do to an animal. So when it comes to harm, obviously accidental harm isn't the kind of thing that's going to get prosecuted just because technically they are property. But if it comes to, like, you know, do I think you ought to be able to burn cats in the town square? Absolutely not. I think that that is cruelty. And, you know, essentially, I think that that kind of a thing is going to have to come down to the state level. There shouldn't be any federal laws when it comes to animal cruelty. But I think that when on the state level, you know, if there's a law against, you know, burning cats in the town square, that's probably something that I wouldn't oppose, just because I do think that animals deserve at least some very minimal level of respect. And yeah, this live stream will be able to be watched later, so I'm actually going to stream it on Facebook as soon as this is over. So I hope you guys enjoy the show. So it looks like we got another couple good questions here on Facebook. Let me put this, let's see, somebody says, Article 5, Convention of the States. Yeah, so I do think that it's probably a good idea. The only problem is that while I think that having a convention of states would be all good in theory, most likely the fact is that libertarians are outnumbered. And if you have an Article 5 convention of the states, then liberals would probably dominate, and then they would do things like abolish the Second Amendment, because the entire Constitution could be written at an Article 5 convention. So before you do something like that, you better make sure that you've got the numbers on your side. So think about it like this, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, are you going to go into a battle where you're hopelessly outnumbered? You know your people are going to get slaughtered. I mean, that sounds kind of ironic coming from someone who went up and ran for president of the United States and got totally slaughtered, right? Well, I learned my lessons. So don't do what I did, guys. No, I'm just kidding. There are some losing battles that are worth fighting for the principle of the thing. But when it comes to Article 5, I definitely think that it would only be a good idea. It would only be a good idea if we had the numbers. So you've got to consider what you have to lose before you guys throw yourself into battle. Anyways, this has been a really good talk, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. Do me a favor, guys, if you enjoy this, share it on your Facebook pages, share it on your Twitter pages, and share it with all your friends on all your favorite social networks. Email it around. And as always, don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at the Libertarian Republic.com.